Good evening. I'm Kilowatt 2, Romeo, India Whiskey. You will hear both me, my name is Dick, and Mel, Kilo 2, Kilo, Echo, Yankee. His name is Mel, my name is Dick. Mel and Dick try to gather the curious people every Sunday night for the thing called the Technical Net. And the Technical Net tries very hard to answer those questions about not only how, but why. Why does this radio equipment behave this way? And what do you got to do to make it work better? How do you get more enjoyment out of this fairly complicated high technology hobby involving wireless equipment, computers, and whatever, called ham radio? There are 26 different kinds of ham radio. 2-meter FM ham radio, which you're listening to right now, is just one of the 26 kinds. If for some reason you're displeased with that one, don't give up the hobby. It's an extremely educational hobby. And try one of the other 25 kinds. Try two or three of them before you decide it's not for you. An amazing number of people will be writing to Mel and I and tell us that, hey, I found you guys by way of word of mouth or by way of my scanner. And, gee, you guys seem to be having a lot of fun, learning an awful lot. I wanted to join in on it. I decided to go get a ham license. So it's an educational process. There's an extremely large amount of brain power. Maybe the best brain power in the United States gathers in the New York City area. This particular repeater covers northern New Jersey, southern New York, southwestern Connecticut, northeastern New Jersey. And within that group of ham radio operators listening to tech nets like this one, and there's two or three different tech nets, they will hear a subject being discussed that's within their area of expertise. They chime in and tell us what they know. So we're sharing an awful lot of pretty fancy...
Repeater, timeout, repeater, timeout, cancel.
There's a good example of what you shouldn't do. You got to watch you watch every minute. And for long-winded people, you got to worry about that. And each time we turn it back to you, make sure you wait long enough to hear the beep before you start talking so the machine gets reset properly. The main subjects that get discussed on the Technical Net are the subjects that the people signing in bring to our attention. With rare exception, Mel will have a packaged piece of information that he has prepared on things like antenna gain or how decibels work or how a Smith chart works. But for the most part, the subjects discussed are the subjects that you guys bring as real questions. And so if you're unhappy with the subjects, you got to be happy with the people who signed in, not necessarily us. Yes, from time to time, the subjects discussed do get long-winded. If that bothers you, then I guess you've got to spin the dial and go listen somewhere else, because although people are sometimes annoyed with the long-windedness, the majority will tell us, hey, I got a more complete answer, a more complete understanding than I could have gotten by any other means. And although it was a little bit long-winded and I had to wait around real long, the wait was worth it. And there are two other solutions. Let me drop. We try very hard at around 9:30 to flip over to mailbag and answer the questions from the people who don't yet have their ham license, beginning hands. We give them extra emphasis. And so some of them are younger people who have to go to bed earlier because they go to school the next morning. So at 9:30, we flip over to them for a while. And then we come back to our normal questions. If you have a problem that you sign in and we didn't get to your subject early enough, and you're on the list, the very next weekend, you'll be number one on the runway, if you know what I mean. If you can't stay up as late as a particular other subject you wanted to listen to, some people will run a tape recorder and listen to it as they drive to work the next morning. And there also is a website by which all of these tech nets for the last 5 years or so are being recorded. And if you go to a website called www.amateurradio.tangovictor, that website has all of these tech nets recorded with documentation, and it takes a little while for the documentation to catch up, but you can even select particular subjects and go directly to those particular reels of audio, if you know what I mean. Let me drop. So there's multiple ways that this show, that usually lasts 4 hours. We start at 8 o'clock at night, and over the years it's been getting longer and longer, and now we go to midnight on most evenings. And so if you're not able to wait around that long, there's various ways that that material can be brought to your attention, and you can go to bed at a more reasonable hour. Last week we were discussing the troubleshooting of a power supply on a high-definition television set. And although that doesn't sound like ham radio, it's wireless electronics. It's strongly related in that the switching-type power supplies that are used on high-definition television sets are very similar to the switching power supplies that are used in many of our ham radio rigs. The more enthusiastic guys don't have any real fear of opening up the cabinet of their piece of equipment as long as it's out of warranty and doing troubleshooting. Within certain safety practices being formed, being followed, that could be a very successful operation. A person signs into the technical net by giving Mel and Dick your call letters, your name, and the word yes in that order, which means you do have a question or a comment for the net. We don't require tens and hundreds of guys signing in saying, I'm listening. After 27 and a half years of this particular technical net, let me drop. By now, since 1982, this has been running. We sort of accept the fact that there are people there, and that doesn't have to be proven to us anymore. So you'll save us all some time if you really have a question or a comment, and those are the people who do sign in. A typical sign-in would sound like this. N2XJN, Wesley, and yes. That means Wesley does have a question. He wants to be put on the list, and we'll get to him in that order. So do we have any check-ins at this time? Please give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes, if you have a question or a comment. K2RIW, my name is Dick, and we're all listening.
November 2, previous November. Yes, Wesley.
Okay, that was a triple. We heard Wesley first. Who was the other person?
WW2W, Anthony. Yes.
Okay, we got Anthony. Anyone else?
WS2N, Paul, with comment.
Okay, Paul. He's a man who was involved in a troubleshooting operation, and from my point of view, what little I've heard, some progress has been made. Anyone else to check in? Please give me your call letters, name, and the word yes at this time. K2RIW.
K2KYQ, Joe.
Opening
all, K2KEYQ.
Okay, we heard Joe, and that mysterious person was Mel. And one last call. Anyone else to check into the TechNet? Give me your call letters, your name, and the word yes if you've got a question or a comment.
KC2MDP, and yes.
And Mr. MDP, you forgot to give us your name.
Sorry, Dick. Steve.
Never heard of you. That was a joke. Very fine, Steve. And just to be sure, Steve, if we do get a little bit long-winded, we don't get to you until, let's say, 10 o'clock. Are you able to stay up that late tonight, Steve?
Yeah, no problem, Dick. I'll be around till you close down around midnight.
There's one of the enthusiastic guys. One of my attitudes is that within each ham radio operator, true ham radio operator, in my opinion, there is a curious person who would like to be a scientist, would like to find out what's going on. We've been hearing over the last few weeks that Wesley has been gathering a significant amount of test equipment in order to do some interesting measurements that are different than the ones that have been done up till now. And one of the last pieces of instrumentation he received, he sent me a picture of it, is a very fancy machine that will measure the magnetic characteristics. You'd be amazed how few students with a master's degree coming out of electrical engineering school would be able to design a magnetic transformer. Just a power transformer, an audio transformer, or an RF transformer. Be amazed how few people know how to do that. That's an extremely useful thing when you're making balance and impedance matching devices and things that will give you common mode rejection and so on. So how goes your quest, Wesley? And one of these days you're going to give us a couple of hints as to how all of this fancy equipment in Queens is eventually going to become either the Wesley Laboratories, or is it looking for a new way for sending power through the air without wires. As you may know, that's a little bit of a joke, because Mr. Tesla was attempting to do that, a very, what's the word for it, far-flung quest to use no wires to send power through the air. What we now know about the so-called inverse square law means that that was a rather difficult thing to do. Not saying it's impossible, but very difficult. But some of the other things that Mr. Tesla did are very worthwhile, like his research into three-phase power AC systems as opposed to the Edison more DC systems.
Repeater, timeout. Repeater, timeout. Cancel.
Although not many people know that, though, Edison also was involved in three-phase power with a shoe manufacturing company in Massachusetts that he set up, so not everything he did was DC, even though that was his first major attempt in Manhattan. So over to you, Wesley. What's the latest? N2XJN, K2RIW on the Tech National.
I think, Dick, hello everybody, this is November to X-ray Juliet, November. Am I coming out good?
Loud and clear, please proceed, and don't do what I did, time out. Make sure you watch, and every minute or minute and a quarter, give a little bit of a breather so the machine gives you a beep.
Okay. The last piece of equipment that I acquired was its magnetometer. Is able to measure the magnetic field of the magnet, and it could be utilized in motors, neodymium magnets, and stuff. But it is not what I want to talk about. Well, when you have the laboratory has to serve a certain purpose, and the purpose of this is design and build devices or measure some properties. So the most common problem I remember from 30-something years ago when I was a very young guy, actually 40 years ago, I'm 53 right now, approaching 54, actually next month, is PCB boards. You got to mount these elements somehow, and you can use for that purpose acidic residue. You can use a mill the PC board, and you can do many things about it. But I did not hear that subject to be picked up recently, at least from the time that I joined TechNet, and I do very much admire Dick for that purpose, and all of the crew that is helping you out. Let me drop. Okay, so you have a schematic, then what is that you do next? Of course, I have done already a few printed boards and, quite a few printed boards and electronics on it, but I would like to hear from Dick about it. Back to you, Dick, and to XJM.
Okay, in some respects, you came to the right place. I've got a bunch of opinions. I'll express my opinions. Other people listening to my opinion will say, no, I disagree. You should do this instead. So therefore, you're about to get more than one answer, in my opinion. JB, I'm trying to think of me. Yeah, sure enough. I had some printed circuit boards built for me about 2 years ago by an extremely successful operation, and therefore I'm saying you should consider it. The way it was done classically by ham radio operators, following somebody's schematic diagram or an article in a magazine like QST, CQ, Ham Radio 73 or whatever, is they would, by some means, lay out a printed circuit board on double-sided copper-clad raw material, and by putting that painted material on there, which is called the resist, where the paint is on the acid that you're about to use, that you dunk the printed circuit board in, eats away all the copper in the places where the printed material is not there, and you have to be real careful with how you dispose of those acids these days, because toxic waste, you can't just legally pour it down the drain, you can't pour it out into the sewer. So making your own printed circuit boards, lots and lots of hams have done it. It's a fairly dirty process. It's a fairly involved process. It's got a lot of learning curve to it. The results look a little bit homely, but can be very effective. There's a much better way. Let me drop. Once you know what you want, in other words, you've got a schematic diagram, and there are a few computer programs that you can get a hold of that will help you do the layout. You tell the computer program, I've got an integrated circuit, model number so-and-so, located here. It's got 16 leads on it, and the raw data you give it tells it that lead number 1 is the ground, and lead number 16 is the B-plus lead input, and lead number 2 is the positive, and lead number 3 is the negative input for an operational amplifier that's in there, and so on. You give it the raw information. You tell it what resistors and capacitors and whatever that you want by way of the schematic. And the computer program helps you with the layout. I haven't seen a whole lot of those programs, but I know that they exist. An enthusiastic guy can come up with his own layout. But once you've got the layout that you desire, and once that layout is eventually put into something like a Gerber file, and there's a number of other formats by which you can have the layout that you desire into a file, and be very careful about making sure your integrated circuit is not laid out on the printed circuit board upside down. You'd be amazed how many times that error occurs. You get a perfectly complete printed circuit board back from the manufacturer that I'm about to tell you about. The capacitors, the resistors, they're all in the right place. The integrated circuits are in the right place, but the schematic diagram that was given on the data sheet had it upside down. It was the bug view, the dead bug view, as opposed to the way it's really laid out in the printed circuit board. So be very, very careful about checking it. But once you've got a file in the right format for the circuit diagram that you desire, and you mail it to the right company by electronic means, there is a company in Toronto, Canada. I'll eventually find out the name of them for you. You mail them that file that you want, and you tell them that you want 1, 3, 30, or 300 of those printed circuit boards. The very first one costs you something like $100, and the next 10 costs you another $10, if you know what I mean. Relatively reasonable prices for a person of your resources. And maybe now I'll admit that when I did that,
I'll fill in all the blanks for you, Dick.
Fantastic. Eric's even got the names for you. But that's one of many companies, the one in Toronto, Canada, where, as I said, I bought from them 2 or 3 years ago, $100 and some odd was the actual board. They've got all kinds of computer programs that will check the layout to make sure that there isn't an error. They'll mail you an email back saying, are you sure you want a ground in this area, and you're sure you don't want another ground over here? And so some automatic checking takes place. The printed circuit board gets made. The holes get drilled in the right places. And by way of express UPS mail, the thing is in your hand about 3 days later, if you're willing to pay the mailing charge. And if not, you save a couple of dollars and it gets mailed to you a little bit slower. But now that's a professional house that'll lay it out on whatever thickness of board you want, whatever kind of board you want. And it's an extremely good-looking thing with the components indicated and whatever. For a person to do that by hand nowadays is almost out of the question. You really want to go to a professional house to make the board, because unless you're an extremely poor person and you can't afford the, let me pick a number, $150, if you look at the man hours that you're going to put into doing it yourself, and you actually figure out what's going on, you'll eventually find that you're working for $2 an hour, if you know what I mean, as opposed to having a much beautiful-looking board coming back to you with a hell of a lot less errors and a lot prettier and cheaper in the long run. So what's the name of that company in Toronto, among other printed circuit houses that you know about or have used, Eric? KE2EJ, take your time. Don't time out like I do. K2RIW in the tech net.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, there's a number of companies that I've used for work. When I do stuff for myself, I make my own boards myself. Don't forget, I have a CNC machine, a little CNC machine which drills my holes. I can also use the CNC machine to actually, instead of doing the chemical etch, I can do a mechanical etch. It works out very well. The only thing the CNC machine doesn't do for me is give me plated through holes, but I have a solution to that too. Anyway, as far as the program goes, what I would recommend is you go to eagle.com. There's a program called Eagle. I've been using it for years, and they actually acknowledge amateur radio operators. And you are allowed to make a 20 centimeter by 30 centimeter board for free. Use all their libraries and do a really good job of laying out a board. Hang on a second, let me read that drop. And a company like Sunstone Circuits, and if I can get you the exact address, will take the file that the Eagle makes, and the Eagle, by the way, will produce files in many different formats. So, the other birds wanted them. I think I have to bring the program up and pull up one of the things that I've just done recently. I'll give you their exact email address. I actually etch my own boards and make my own plated through holes, which I use. I don't use ferric chloride. That's really nasty stuff, and it does a pretty ratty job. If you go to a company, a website called Tinker and Tinker, where they actually sell drill bits, they also sell conductive inks, which you can use to make your plated through boards, and they also show you the whole process. The etchant that I use is actually 50% hydrogen peroxide and 30% sulfuric acid, or you can get away with battery acid, which is 15%. You mix it right, set it up, that stuff lasts forever, you never throw it out, you constantly replenish it, so it never goes bad on you. And there's another company called the PC Pool, which is based in Ireland. Now, you can get boards out of them, two and three boards for like $30 and $40, simply because what they do is they make these huge boards, and you are simply one part of that board that gets cut off. So, that's where you can begin. Sunstone Circuits, there's also another company called PC Board 123. They're another good one. They're about $80 for the first two, boards. Eagle is actually CAD saw. That's the name of the
repeater.
Considering that the kid was bigger than me, probably not a whole lot, but now that he's older.
Repeater, timeout, cancel.
Right after you mentioned the word CAD soft, which was about 20 seconds ago, is when you timed out. You might want to repeat what you said beyond that point, Eric, go ahead.
Yeah, the program Eagle is by CAD soft. It's CADSoft.com, not Eagle.com. That was CADSOFT. And actually a German company, but CADSoft.com will get you there.
Okay, and I'll eventually find out the name of this company that I used in the Toronto area that I was extremely happy with. My goodness. And I think they also, for a small premium charge, will plate through the holes for you if you want plated through holes. And plated through holes are not always required. If you're using components with actual leads to them, sticking a lead through the hole and soldering it on both sides gives you the plated through hole very nicely. Yes, with surface mount components, you do need plated through holes. And the boards that I was building were two-sided boards. I wonder if you've ever, by way of any of the printed circuit houses you've gone to, Eric, because you really wanted a compact unit, you might have wanted a 3, 4, or 5 layer PC board as opposed to a single-sided or double-sided PC board. Have any of the places you've ever used also at reasonable prices built multi-layer boards? I'm beginning to think the answer is going to be no. I think you're getting into a very deep commercial process once you go beyond two sides. You can give me an update on that one, Eric. KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, I also got some ideas.
Very good. We'll go to you right after Eric. Go ahead, Eric.
As a matter of fact, I've done four-layer boards several times, especially with some RF stuff that I was making. I like having the ground plane in the middle. The capacitive properties are actually mandatory when you start doing some VHF and UHF stuff. And it actually comes in very handy. I have a program that figures out printed circuit networks, and one of the things you need is a ground plane on the other side. I have actually made my own 4 and 6 layer boards. It's not that much of a pain, but it's a bit of a pain. But if you do it right, and you do the etching right, and then you do the plating through right, you wind up with something that's really nice. The precise address for the CAD program is CADSoftUSA.com, CADSOFTUSA.com. That will get you a really, really nice program. And in the world of surface mount, because, sorry folks, getting leaded parts are becoming more and more and more difficult because they don't make them. So, you got to start getting into surface mount. I stopped using leaded parts a long time ago, and everything I build is surface mount. So, like PC Pool, PC Board 123, They will make you multi-layered boards, but you actually have to multiply the cost. The costs go up very rapidly as you start to add layers. K2RW, K2J.
My experience is that with a good layout, 90% of the time, a two-sided board is more than sufficient. The only places that I've ever I've gone to as high as 16-layer boards on the commercial products I was involved in for one of my particular clients. They needed to make something super small. And when Wesley is running his particular laboratory, I don't think he's at the risk of a commercial organization that's trying to sell, say, for instance, a cell phone, where everybody wants the cell phone to be the size of a postage stamp. I don't quite understand that, but they think people want that, and therefore they use a zillion layers on the board in order to squeeze everything in real small. One of the things that when it comes to assembling the board, when I come back to Eric after we go to Mel, Eric, you're going to tell me when it comes to putting surface mount components on the board, you've got a real good set of eyes, you've got a real good set of close-up glasses that you use. My strongest recommendation is either you go to a commercial house to do the assembly of the super small surface mount components, or buy a stereo zoom microscope used. And sometimes you can get those as cheap as $150 with the right kind of lighting and the right kind of a zoom microscope when you're doing the soldering. My goodness, can you really see what's going on? You see all the whiskers on the board before they create a short circuit, and you get a chance to correct them. I've been doing everything under a microscope for the last 6 years, and I think there is no other way. Eric and I have a slight difference of opinion. His eyes are young enough that he's gotten away with it up till now, but I think the day will come when he's going to want the extra resolution of a good microscope. But let's see how Mel does it. Mel, how do you get your pin press circuit boards made? And I'm not so sure that a person should put up with the strong smells, the problem of getting rid of toxic materials from doing the etching yourself. You can get such a nice job for very inexpensive prices by my standards by going to the right house these days, so I think that's the right way to make a printed circuit board. I don't think any amateur should build one anymore. Yes, Eric has got this numeric controlled machine that will do the routing and will mechanically cut away the unused portions of the printed circuit board as opposed to etching it away. Very nice process. Noisy, by the way. Makes a whole lot of dust. And that machine itself is a $5,000 or $10,000 machine. Although for a guy with Wesley's resources,
we'll figure it out for $1,500 brand new.
How about that? So for Wesley's resources, no real problem. Mel, how do you get printed circuit? How do the guys at the Kings County Radio Club get their printed circuit boards made? K2KEY, K2RIW in the second half.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Well, personally, what I've done, many different types of layouts. If it's one and only that I build a lot, well, you know, I go point-to-point wiring using vector boards, that very fine mesh vector boards that seem to be just the right layout for pushing little transistors and integrated circuits in to that vector and then doing, like I say, wiring it up that way. Now, there's some interesting things that, you know, transpired over the years. Years ago, when they started modulars for, like, televisions, like Zenith, they used to make their modules very funny way. They made them that they were just like straight line lands, I guess you'd call them, with punched holes, and you put the resistors, the capacitors in, and it was wired appropriately across. In other words, they provided lands, but on the reverse side from where the components were mounted. And I saved a lot of those boards, you know, from television, from Zenith, and all those modules. Tons of them were being dumped that were no good, and I found that they make excellent prototype boards. I also have a vertical milling system with it. Let me let it drop. I have a vertical miller that has a XY table that does basically the same thing, except you follow along and you have to do it manually with two handles. One is the X travel, the other one's Y travel. With the right cutter, it does a very accurate job of cutting boards. But, believe it or not, there is a company also that has produced a lot of these boards with lands and also for experiments and basic modular boards for, like, for instance, laying out, like, you have, I don't know, up amplifiers, wideband RF devices and all, just boards of all kinds for different prototypes. The company is called Quantrix. I built a DSP unit with 23 ICs in it, an early version, so I could learn all about DSP step by step. And they were able to supply me a board. I had to get the components, but they supplied a board for this. So they have a listing of boards, tremendous amount, called Quantrix. Now, another subject aside, you mentioned magnetic. I want to ask you about something about a magnetic instrument that I have here that I never knew what the heck its real use is. Maybe somebody can answer it, Dick. But pick that up first, what I've just brought up. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, Quantrix sounds good. Spell that for us. Is it Quantrix.com or something like that? And is this a house that makes printed circuit boards or makes this kind of vector board where you stick the leads through and complete the connections on the other side? Back to you, Mel.
Roger, that's Quantrix. Post Office Box. Say yes. Quantrix. Quantrix. Post Office Box 2163, Nevada City, like the state of Nevada, but Nevada City, California. Nevada City, California, 95959 is their area code, Dick. And they get a list from them. I guess they get a website. I don't know what it is offhand. I would assume it's the same thing. But you'd be amazed how many boards they've got. You know, just boards, just PC boards, already cut. Over.
Now, left-handedly, I've heard from both Mel and Eric the word prototyping. And the experience that I had using this company in Toronto, the very first printed circuit board, because the circuit I was building was only at one megacycle of operation. That was the good news. The bad news, though, is that my particular circuit had four cascaded, fully dual differential amplifier stages all running at one megacycle. It was an extremely small capacitive sensing circuit. This was a circuit that had the ability to sense the difference between 0005 picofarads. So we're talking about femtofarads here. Femto? No. Almost getting into attofarads. So, because I was running at a very low frequency, one megacycle, I assumed that a nice, efficient layout of the printed circuit board, saving board space, would work very well. One megacycle to me is DC. Well, I rapidly found out that because the circuit was so sensitive to very small capacitances, where the first two stages, what was nearby, was very, very critical. I ended up putting up metal shields in places to stop the cross-coupling between successive stages. And to make a long story short, I needed a second layout. And because it wasn't very expensive, didn't take very much time, and I now was smarter. After we did some troubleshooting on the first layout, we rapidly found out what the second layout should work, how it should be laid out, and things worked out very well. By using vector boards and dead bugs as assemblies, let me drop. If it's an RF circuit running at more than, let me pick a number, 10 kilohertz, there's a lot to be said to make a so-called breadboard first. Make a working circuit that's a little bit homely looking, but it's got some kind of a physical layout where you can find out what is and isn't sensitive. Mother Nature's got a lot of surprises for you. You think you understand the way the B-plus and the bypass wiring and bypass capacitors and the decoupling chokes and the filter networks, and you think you know how all this is working. If it's got more than one stage to it, your particular layout, guaranteed there's going to be some surprises. So there's a lot to be said to make an engineering prototype or a breadboard, as we call it, maybe a first production model before you really make the final looking circuit. If you want it to be pretty, if you're presenting it to a customer and you want it to look professional, and maybe you're eventually going to go into production of the item. I'll bet you you've found some surprises from time to time, Eric, on some of your first layouts. And there was some other thing that you were going to tell us. I forget what it was. Let me pass it back to Eric before we go back to Wesley. KE2EJ, K2LAW in the TechNet.
KC2QAQ with a comment.
You're right after Rep. Eric. Go ahead, Eric, first.
All right, let me give you a precise website. This particular website I'm going to give you now is called www.thinktank.com. thinktank.com. They have a PC board process manual that you can read. It covers both mechanical etching and chemical etching. It's very comprehensive. And for those of you that want to really take a crack at making your own boards, this is the place to start. They supply you with all the materials if you want to buy it from them. And the manual is very comprehensive. It's very nicely laid out. It gives you a good place to start, and just the reading of it will give you a reasonably decent idea of what it takes to make a double-sided or multi-layer PC board. And let me drop that the first time. This other company is Sunstone Circuits, SUNSTONE.com. They also have, they actually have the PC Board 123 design software, which you can download for free. It has a lot of really good stuff in it to help you in terms of circuit layout. It's got auto routers that even flags you to things that might be problematic in terms of laying out bypass and ground and stuff like that. They also will guarantee you overnight delivery if you want to pay for it. They're really very inexpensive. I think they're based in Oregon, for what I remember. And they're a very good company to work with. If you want to go cheaper and you don't mind waiting a week, then you can do a search for PC Board Pool, PCBPOOL.com. They're actually based in Ireland, and they also do an excellent job, and they take several different formats. And also the Devil Layout program, which is free, CADsoft.com. More of my reasons for doing multi-layer board was really, you know, when you're working with, 164 lead chips and you've got a lot of stuff to go a lot of places, the multi-layer board really helps a lot. And, no, my eyes are not all that good anymore, but, you know, rather than have the microscope on the table, actually, I was looking for a good microscope. I almost got one, but somebody bought it before I got to it at Dayton. So I'll get one eventually. I know that's the way I'm going, but at least the microscope that goes on a headband works pretty well for me at this point. K2RW, K2EJ.
And when it comes to buying a stereo zoom microscope with the right kind of a lighting system, don't be sucked into buying too much gain. Somewhere between 10 and 30 to 1 magnification is plenty. For people who will try to sell you, 90 magnification, it's too high. You don't need that much. Good lighting and 10 to 30 is what you're going to be using a high percentage of the time. I bought mine for, mine is a Bausch & Lomb stereo zoom microscope. I was in Utica, New York. The Rome Air Development Center had dumped a whole lot of their hardware for a division they were closing down in the local surplus house in Utica. And I saw this microscope, and the guy said, it's going to cost you $150. I could have talked him into a lower price. I am guessing the thing was $2,000 brand new. I didn't even try. I just opened up my wallet, handed him the money, had a big smile on my face, and I walked away with the thing, and I've been using it ever since. And along came a good friend of mine who gave me a fiber optic double lighting system. In other words, there's one light bulb, let me drop it, that goes into a fiber optic cable that splits into two separate cables that are on flexible leads that are gooseneck lamp type leads. And now I can take these fiber optic lighting sources, which are very small because the light is at the other end of this great big box and a wire, so to speak, and now I can decide to light the thing I'm looking at top-down or side view. You can get an awful lot of fun at just looking at a $100 bill up close when you use fiber optic lighting that is parallel to the bill itself, and you Therefore, you look at the hills and valleys of the ink that's on the $100 bill and all those emblems. I got to make some photography of that because it's fascinating stuff. But when you use that kind of variable lighting, in other words, many of the ring lights that you have on a microscope are just pure top-down, very low contrast lighting. Good lighting, yes, good resolution, but if you want a lot of contrast, you want to have the ability to bring the light in from the side, and all of a sudden you can emphasize whatever is important to you, and you can get a lot more information out of what you're looking at. That's a strongly felt opinion, having been there. Now, when it comes to building printed circuit boards, I bet, Glenn, you've run into problems where the first layout was not quite what you expected on the breadboard, and you came up with another layout, and I bet you built quite a few boards in your time. KC2QIQ, K2RIW, you got it, Glenn.
Yeah, good evening, Dick. Good evening to everybody on the net. Yeah, what I actually wanted to mention is, sure, layouts can definitely be problematic, especially if you're working with integrated circuits with high gain and you're not familiar with them. I guess a little tidbit of information I wanted to offer is that many of the ICs that you'd like to use in this circuit, there are plenty of data sheets available on the internet, and sometimes you can go back to old catalogs as a resource and find the application notes for the ICs that you'd like to use. And because what I found many times is what could save you a lot of hair pulling in the future is just to read through some of the application notes and the layout design notes, because for every one of these ICs, usually the manufacturer of the IC creates some kind of a test board initially, and you may not have access to the test board, but certainly the application notes are definitely available. And if you see how, you know, the device is supposed to be laid out onto a ground plane, what kind of lead spacing they suggest for the IC, that could really save a whole lot of trouble. KC2QIQ.
One more thing, Dick. Okay, I'm going to be going back to Glenn for another question I've got, but Eric first. Go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, one more thing. If you use Sunstone, they have a partner. I've used them a couple times. They're very good. It's called Screaming Circuits, and they actually will assemble your prototype, assuming that they have the parts, they can acquire the parts, or you provide them with the parts.
Another very nice offer. Do you have a particular website and a particular brand name of the software to do the layout or the actual house that builds your print circuit boards that you would like to recommend, Glenn? Do you have any particular brand name, website, whatever that you want to suggest? KC2QIQ, K2RIW?
Yes, it depends on the level of what somebody wants to do. I mean, like Eric has mentioned, you know, like the PCB 1-2-3, for me, that's boring. I mean, yes, you can get the job done. There again, sometimes I think, you know, for the amount of learning curve you have to do, granted, cheap software is practically for free. I think as long as you have the PCB and you're done, they'll recommend the site. And it can kind of give you the software, but that should tell you a little bit about the software itself. It's junk. But pretty much what I like to use is the TCAD, which is now Altium. You can pull up an old copy of the Orchid and Orchid PCB design. You know, there's a lot of these programs that people don't use anymore. You know, they keep on upgrading them every year. But for the hobbyist, sometimes you can get a hold of some of these old PCB programs that are quite a bit downrisk that might not be useful to a company doing professional design engineering anymore. But certainly for the hobbyist, you can put these programs on your PC with multiple Windows based. And you can do phenomenal work, multi-layers if you want to. You have very well-established parts libraries where parts that you'd like to use are probably the mechanical facings and the pads are already, and the pad stacks are already set up in the design. You can pull them out of libraries and place your components on the board. And certainly to get you to a quality piece of board design, I think a lot better than, let's say, PCB 1-2-3. That assumes you know a whole lot about the parts that you're placing on those boards. K2RIW, PCB 2-2-2.
I've been trying to get Orchid for years. Where are you getting it for free?
Orchid isn't something you're going to get for free, Eric. Generally, what happens with Orchid is that there's down revision versions of it. Many times, you just do an eBay search every so often. A lot of times, it's going to come back blank, or you see the books offered. But I would say probably once a month you'll see an old downrev version of Orchid, an Orchid PCB, Orchid PCB 3 and 6, which actually ran on the old Fed SOS version, but it'll still emulate it and give you Gerber outputs and everything that you need. But just keep on searching on eBay. And usually for like, I've never seen a version go for over $100, but, you know, they're very, very down-rip versions, Eric.
Right, because, you know, I could go spend the $5,000, but that just hasn't been in my budget. So, I haven't seen it. I mean, I've looked on eBay a lot, but, you know, I'll look again. Thanks.
Eric, also keep in mind, PCAD is great. I mean, I started off with Orchid years and years ago, and there again, it's such an antique. You can find down-rev versions of TCAD that are so much phenomenal, so much better, and they're going to be about the same price. So the key things, I mean, don't say Altium took over TCAD, they bought them out, but TCAD itself is an old program now. You know, I mean, they're floating around all over the place. Sometimes, if you even ask around old design companies, a version of TCAD or Orchid is probably sitting in somebody's library at the bottom of the stack of old books. So I found them. I found Orchid and TCAD. And even old P-Spice in garage sales, sitting on top of a stack of old books. It's the kind of thing that a lot of times it's just not advertised because people don't see the value in it, other than a design engineer. So many, many times you can find these things, you know, if it's even a garage sale. Sometimes, look, if you see books sitting somewhere outside and things are just there, that's sometimes where you're going to find it. Take your tips like this.
As you can tell, Wesley, you're into an extremely interesting area where there is a significant amount of art and science and learning curve to doing a good layout and getting proper synthesis of a good printed circuit board. Lots of information has just flowed in the last 40 minutes or so. You're probably going to want to play back the tape recording by way of going to amateurradio.tv to listen to some of the fine details, if you were not already running your tape recorder. And my guess is you're going to be coming back to us in future weeks getting more of the fine details to finally get set up for the right kind of a PC board layout program that makes the right kind of a Gerber-like file, which is in a format that the PCB house is going to build you the board. As you can tell, although Eric builds his own boards either mechanically or occasionally with chemistry, I think in 2010 you probably don't want to do that anymore. There are some extremely good houses that will do that for you for faster times and cheaper prices than you can do it yourself, and you don't want to put up with the toxic chemistry and the smells and the errors and whatever of building your own board. That's a strongly felt opinion. So there's a lot of learning curve. The next time I talk to my good buddy,
you know, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I know. For the guys who have done it, they take a lot of pride in it. But I think, if I know Wesley, he's looking for results as opposed to just bragging rights of building his own board. He's got a higher goal than that, in my opinion. And when I get back to my buddy Kent, WA5VJB, and he has a zillion printed circuit boards he'll sell you for very inexpensive prices. If you go to his website, www.WhiskeyAlpha5VictorJulietBravo.com. He's got all kinds of microwave antenna printed circuit boards. Funny how my buddy Kent in Grand Prairie, Texas, right outside of Dallas, he has a number of local printed circuit houses he goes to for inexpensive prices and very fast turnaround. He gets all kinds of exotic printed circuit boards running all the way up to 18 gigahertz on some of his projects that he gets built for him. And so there are various little nuggets of information as to how to do this and how to do it well. And you're eventually going to find this because I can see you're getting into that area. The fact that you're going to be a little bit frustrated at first because it's an awful lot to learn and who's the best program for this, who's the best house for that, it'll eventually settle down. Don't let that worry you. Just keep hacking away at it, Wesley. You've got a fascinating question here. N2XJN, look out. This is a pretty tall mountain you're about to climb, Wesley. N2XJN, K2RIW in the TechNet.
This takes to KEYM.
Yeah, I'm going to go back to Mel right after Wesley. Wesley first, go ahead.
Okay, very interesting discussion. I do appreciate all of the feedback that I've heard from you guys. And, with all due respect, I disagree, Dick, with your statement saying that you should not do it by yourself. and you don't want to have this. Well, let me put it this way. When you're painting the car, you use the mask. Well, should you say to anybody, you know what, don't paint the car? Well, then another question. If you have a fuse to be changed, are you going to call the electrician and spend $150 for it? And additional topic. Well, when you make your first printed board, the second one is easier, but the 30th one is absolutely nothing for you. And by the time that you actually start from the scratch to the time that you make your printed board is 1 hour. 1 hour. Guys, it's not 1 month, it's not 2 weeks, it's not $150. It's 1 hour. And some of the techniques are actually to utilize for it, let me drop. It's very inexpensive program from the computer. You print it out on photographic paper, the one that is actually is the staples. You make the ink actually to, you put with the ink side to the printed board and you use your iron. If you don't want to use the iron, there were laminators, but the laminators actually have the sensor for low temperature. What you're going to do is just put the sensor or just have the sensor for much higher temperature. It's the temperature about 90 degrees centigrade, which will come, I don't know, how much, well, it's close to the boiling water temperature, even more. And when you do that, actually that ink stick to the printed board. Then you use the chemical residue, which is very inexpensive, at least in Europe, and easy to gather. Not in here, let me drop. And when you tear out this piece of paper, that the ink stays on it. What you're going to do is then you put this board into this residue, and whatever. And then you wait approximately 10 minutes, and you've got it. Now, then you clean it, and after you clean it, you have it for the cost of what? $5. Let me put it $10. That's my comment in this matter. Now, I have a few questions to Eric. One is, repeat how much was the CNC, what is the model number, and where to get it. Then another question is to Dick. What is the model number of the Microsoft that you have? At least I'm going to look for that one on eBay. And I prove myself that I can buy a machine for that cost $11,000 for $300. So, you know, I've got quite a few of them. Anyhow, another question is where to buy the PCB by itself and where to buy the electronic components. I believe that's very important because anybody who wants to deal with that has to sooner or later ask that question. Dick, back to you.
All of a sudden my mind's gone blank. I can't think of the name of the company. That's a mail order house that sells parts very inexpensively, very rapidly, small quantities if you want it. Somebody tell me the name of that company.
DigiKey.com, Mauser, Newark, pick one.
DigiKey is the one I was trying to think of. I've done a lot of parts buying with DigiKey and never turned out unhappy.
A question. Do they have, like we have in Europe, you go to the store, you pick up the parts. Back to you.
I don't think so. I think DigiKey is purely mail order. Is that true, Eric? Go ahead.
Yeah, they're in Minnesota. If you're going to spend more than $50, then you can go to Arrow. But that's the minimum. DigiKey will sell you a part for 5 cents. Newark will sell you a part for $10. Niger will sell you a part for $10. And there's a couple others.
KC2QIQ.
Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, my advice for that sort of a thing is you put together a bill of materials and, you know, build a little spreadsheet or get all your materials down, and when you finally know everything that you need to buy, then you check, like, all of those, all of the above. And there again, because usually there is a price minimum, and that's where really the hobbyist kind of gets burned, because there's going to be like a minimum order price. So at least this way, if you buy everything at once, you just pay once for shipping, and you know, it gets delivered right to your front door. I think that's probably the best way of going about it. I've done it a couple of times. Casey, too, correct you.
Yeah, let me ask you a question on that one, Glenn. To my knowledge, there is no minimum on DigiKey, and I don't think DigiKey is high in price on anything. They may not be the absolute lowest, but DigiKey, for instance, will sell you as small an order as you want, and I think the prices are extremely competitive, is my opinion. Maybe you disagree on that one. Over to you, Glenn.
No, I agree with you, Dick. I guess the point that I'm trying to make isn't that you're always going to be trying to make the minimum order. You know, shipping and mail things is going to cost you money. So the more you package in one set, you know, you're only paying for that mailing and that shipping once. And, you know, of course, the more quantity that you buy, you also get a little bit break on the price there. So, you know, my advice is, you know, try to get as many of the parts on order, you know, in a bulk, and then order them once if you can. You know, that's usually the way to save money, you know, save the most money doing it. K2RIW, KC2, correct me.
Dick?
Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, DigiKey will fit by actually 4 or 5 methods. You know, Glenn's right in that sense, but, you know, what you're paying for postage for, you know, a little envelope or package is that way less than, you know, 7 ounces or something like that, and, you know, it becomes irrelevant.
I tend to agree. With rare exception, I don't work, unless you're buying something pretty heavy. I know that Mel wanted to say some further words. K2QEY, K2RIW, you got a Mel.
KC2QIQ with one more comment.
Mel first. Go ahead, Mel.
Welcome to the W2VL repeater system.
Okay, this is K2KEY. Well, one of the comments I was going to make about machines. New, a lot of these machines are a fortune. I bought this vertical miller that I have here that happens to be very clean condition. I bought a lathe. I got a number of pieces of machinery. I got a machine shop basically in a basement. And there's used machinery companies, places around. And if you look them up, there was one guy, I don't know if he's still in business here in Brooklyn, downtown Brooklyn. Oh, he'd sell you a lot of the older equipment, you know, before they went to all this digital and everything and all. If you just want to make like prototypes and you want to, machine that you can want a hand machine like I do how much milling once in a while. I need a milling machine, a drill press, grinders, you know, all that stuff. I'm not in a, you know, a major producing business, so I'm just making things for myself here and there. You can buy the machinery. I outfitted a whole machine shop for about I don't think I spent more than about $5,000, and I mean I've got everything. With glaze, with collars, and every kind of drill bit, numbers, and dies, and let me let it drop. And, you know, anything you can think of that you would have in a machine shop for doing moderately small work, you know, not, I can't do major, you know, work, really, but if you're just making something that would be involved in ham radio projects or a little bit even further into commercial products. I've got it all, including the arc welder, you know, Heliarc, and you name it. What I was going to ask before you talk about magnets, I got an instrument here called a magnetometer, and I picked it up one time at an auction, and I meant to ask you a number of times now that you mentioned magnets, what in the heck is this thing used for? Basically, I'll describe it. It looks like a large pocket watch with a meter that has 0 in the middle, and then it has +5 and a -5, and it's quite old. I mean, it looks like it goes back a good 30, 40, 50 years or something like that. It's not a modern-looking thing. It's, you know, a metal case and everything. What in the heck do you think it's used for, Dick? Over.
The +5 and the -5, are there any units printed on that screen, Mel, go ahead.
No, but you look at it, it looks like it's 0 centimeter, you know, and it's It just has the graduations, and it has a point, has one point marked, you know, halfway between 2.5 and then plus 5 with a plus next to it. And then it has the same thing going the other way. It's
Comment.
Called RV, Romeo Bravo, R and B, A-N-N-I-S, and it's Indianapolis, in